All right, tonight we're going to go to John 9, and generally we spend 4 or 5 weeks on chapters, but tonight we're going to get through all of John 9, unless the discussion just doesn't allow us, because it's all one story. To me, it's a very interesting story, and we want to see what we can learn from it, and so we're just going to jump right in. This is right after the Feast of Tabernacles. Keep in mind, as John is writing this, that he's telling more towards the end of Jesus' ministry. And the best that we can figure out, this story takes place about 6 months before the crucifixion. So we are getting down kind of to the end of his ministry. So he's been ministering approximately 3 years. Okay, let's begin with verse 1, because the first two verses we're going to get right into the discussion. As he went along, he saw a man who was blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi," what does your version say?
Master.
Teacher. Okay. "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" So here we have a man, most likely he was at a gate, and most likely he was begging, and he was blind from birth. So he must have been well known in the town as being blind from birth. So as they're walking along, the disciples ask, "Master, teacher, rabbi, who sinned? How did this happen? Was he born? Was it his parents because he was born blind, or what was it?" Why would this question even come up?
Well, that was the general thought of the day: is that if divine punishment when you were sick or had deformity or anything, it was either your something you'd done or something your parents had done that caused it.
Okay. Any other input? That's absolutely correct. Any other input?
Is that the way they say that that it was either his fault or his parents, but I mean, how can it be his fault when he was even born?
Okay. That's a good question, and there is an answer to that.
Any... They call him at 6 months before he was crucified, and here they were still calling him teacher and rabbi and master, and not they recognized that he was...
When did they really understand that he was the Messiah? It was after the resurrection. Which is unbelievable, isn't it? Just unbelievable. I mean, they were there right with him, step for step, listened to everything, saw everything, heard the discussions, and they were about as clueless as we are. And the Pharisees were. What was the difference? They were willing to listen into dialogue. And we're going to see really how stubborn the Pharisees get in their dialogue in this story, because it's tied down. Now, back to what Maria asked. There was a train of thought that because sin is inherent, and sin started, of course, in the Garden of Eden, that it could come from the parents who sinned, and God was visiting judgment. So he was saying, "Well, y'all haven't been very good, so we're going to take it out on your son or daughter." Or there was a train of thought in those days that even in the womb, there could be sin or rebellion caused by the baby as it was being formed. So that's why they asked the question, well, was it his parents, or was he just a sinner? Was he just born a sinner, born blind? This is not unknown even in today's philosophy, especially when you get away from Christianity. Hindus, for instance, they pinpoint sins. So if you have headaches, that means that you gave your mother and father all kinds of problems when you were growing up. And so when you came back in the next life, your punishment would be tremendous headaches. If you had heart problems, that meant something. So there is a train of thought that has said that there is punishment that is passed down to the children. There are a couple of passages in the Old Testament that tends to say that the iniquities will pass on down to the generations. And you come around in front, it'll be all right. That generations would come and pass down. But when you look at the big scheme, there's certainly no biblical things. But the Jews latched on to this. Now, what was one of the motivations that the Jews would latch on to this theory? Pharisees especially. Were they sick? Did they have problems? Were they wealthy?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
So if you have good health and you're wealthy, what would that mean?
Blessed of God.
Blessed of God. We got God on our side. By the way, that's a Bob Dylan song for those that are interested. God on our side. So you have God on your side, and you're wealthy and you're healthy. And so if you're poor and you have problems health-wise, don't have God. So they love that theory. They expounded it. But why? Because it raised them up, put other people down.
Well, is it wrong to say if you feel that you're, you know, that you're, everything's going good for you, that God is blessed you? Is that the wrong way to put it?
Well,
or is it because you made some good choices?
What do you think?
Well, it doesn't bother me if someone says that. I can, but I said that one time, and we had a group at our house one time, and one of the guys got mad. He said, "Well, God has blessed me, and I've tried to do everything right, and he got mad at me." So I don't say that anymore.
Yeah. The thing that we hold on to is God has told us through Ellen White that when we get to the end of time and we look back over our life, we would change nothing. Often wondered about that. The conclusion I've come to personally is if we're in the kingdom and we're there, why would we change anything? Because the final result, we're in the kingdom. So, I think that some people are very blessed that God does things. I think other people love Him and want to do good and do follow Him, and things don't work out exactly as one would wish. Now, the answer is, how do we know? Got to remember the very. In fact, we're going to let's go to verse 4, 5, and 6, then we're going to come back and answer the question because the illustration I'm about ready to give is going to answer it. Let's go to verse 3. He says, "Teacher, who sinned? Parents, or was the man born blind? Did he sin somewhere along the way before he was even born?" Says, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is the day, we must do the work of one who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world." Now remember, we talked about this 6 months before the crucifixion, so he's saying, I'm not going to be here forever. Now, let's go back to suffering. First book of the Bible we think that was written was Job. And what's that book all about?
Suffering.
Who caused the suffering?
Well, Satan caused the suffering.
Absolutely. See? So the very first principle laid down in the Bible is the story of Job. And the suffering came from Satan. Now, in this particular book, God permitted it, but the suffering came from Satan, and he caused him. We all know the story. So from the very beginning, with Job being the first book, this principle was laid: with God there's goodness, and with the Satan there is the one that causes. So these religious people should have known better. But they picked a couple of texts here and there that says the sins of the iniquities will go to the third and fourth generation. Why is that particularly true?
Genetics.
Genetics, one. What else?
Environment.
Lifestyle. If your parents grow up worshiping idols, most likely what in the heck are you going to grow up doing? So, yes, ma'am.
Well, we do cause injury to our children by lifestyle before they
absolutely. Absolutely.
Fetal alcohol syndrome. And when I was in substance abuse, they talked about a study that the Navy did, because the Navy has lots of alcoholics. And they found that genetically it takes 3 to 4 generations of each one not drinking to get rid of the genetic predisposition for alcoholism. I thought that was interesting. It went along with the Bible.
Mm-hmm. No, there's you know, a lot of functions come from that environment. Catholic Church used to make a statement. You don't hear it very often now, but they used to make a statement in the 50s and 60s. Give us a child till they're 5 years old and they'll be a Catholic forever. Well, there's a lot to that. And so there is something about that. But on the other hand, Jesus has said right from the very beginning, He said right there, He dispelled, He said neither His parents sinned or He sinned. This was a natural consequences of what happens. Having said this, now let's get down to the parts that's interesting. Now, somebody read verse 6 and 7, please.
Then he spat on the ground and made mud from the spittle and smoothed the mud over the blind man's eyes and told him, go and wash in the pool of Siloam. The word Siloam means sent. So the man went where he was sent and washed and came back seeing.
Okay. Now, several things I'm interested in this. First of all, he spat on the ground, mixed some mud or clay with his saliva. Now, why in the world did he do this?
Well, for one thing, in the 1990s, there was study done and a lot of people picked up on it that a person's own saliva was a good immune thing to, if they could take their own saliva and inject it into them, it'd make them less immune to allergies and what have you. And there was a lot of physicians practicing that. So it's kind of went bad, but anyhow, this was a this.
Did that hold up?
Huh?
Did that hold up?
No, it didn't.
Didn't hold up.
Oh,
okay.
Infections. But this was a remedy that people had used for eons. That the saliva was thought to be a kind of like an antibiotic. You could put it on a sore eye, and you'd get well, or you had a sore somewhere. Like you say, if you burn your finger, what is the first thing you do? You stick it in your mouth. Is it the saliva does it, or the cool wetness that makes it better? Mm-hmm. But it's just things like that.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, there was a custom. There were some people that believed there was some healing element, not supernatural, but just a healing element in the saliva. So it was not unheard of. Today we would think normally that's pretty yucky. But back then it... you know, that was just the custom. Now, this is good because we're going to find out in just a second, but let's see how far you know, how well y'all know the story. Now he mixes it with mud. Why did he do that? This one is a little bit clearer.
So you can see it?
Pardon?
So you can see it?
No, that could be, but it's not the answer I'm looking for.
Made from the dust of the earth?
No. Could be, but not the answer I'm looking for.
To be the dirty part?
No.
Or is it because it was extra work to do on the Sabbath?
Absolutely! Absolutely. First of all, it was incorrect on the Sabbath to take saliva or do any kind of medication. Number two was, when you took saliva and mixed it with clay, create mud. That was out and out right work. So it's interesting that Jesus took this approach. He could have bought out a handkerchief and torn it in half, sold it to the guy for $5 to use as a prayer cloth. He could have put some oil on him and sold that oil to him for $10. But no, he just spat in the ground, mixed him up some mud, put it on his eyes, told the guy, go. Why didn't he heal him right there? Other people, he just said at times, you want to be healed? Yes, thy faith has made you whole. Why didn't he do it to this guy?
Like you said, that the work of God might be displayed.
That's right, yeah. Did the man have to show any faith?
Certainly did.
Yes.
Certainly did. I mean, he could have sat there and said, now let me get this straight. This guy's put something on my eyes. Then tells me, go down to the pool, wash my eyes, and I'll see. So there was an act of faith on his part.
I guess somebody helped him to the pool.
I would imagine would have to. Somebody read verse 8 and 9 and 10. 8 and 9. Now we have a little fun. Next couple of verses, a little fun.
His neighbors and those who have formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. How then?
Okay, that's far enough. How's this fit into the story? Some people say, is that old John, the blind guy? Some say, I think so. Others said, well, I'm not sure. Why would they be doing this?
Well, as we said, he was well known.
Yeah.
And so,
why would they be saying that? Any idea? There's a logical reason, I think. Pardon? Believe?
Credit?
What do you think he looked like when he was blind? What do you think he looked like when he could see? Think there was a difference in his face, his emotions, big smile on his face? Yeah. So, remember, have you ever been walking down the street and you run across somebody just from clear out of the blue and you can't figure out who they are, where I've seen them, because they're out of circumstances that you're used to, and you know, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, this is so and so from. See, that's exactly what happened. They're used to seeing a beggar, blind man, pitiful look, sorrowful look, and all of a sudden, here's this guy running around, happy, smiling face. And so, some wasn't really sure. He looked different. He acted different. But he himself said, "Yep, I'm the man." Verse 10 and 11.
How then were your eyes opened, they demanded. He replied, the man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes, and he told me to go to the Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see.
Okay. Now, by the way, I want to go up. I didn't mention something. Remember they said go to the pool of Siloam, and this word meant sent in the previous verse. I was curious about that. So how does that fit into the story? Well, it really doesn't, but I'll tell you anyway. Hezekiah, when he was king in Jerusalem, he built an artificial spring that was from outside the gates that ran under the gates into the city. And so the theory was, if we're ever at war, then at least we have fresh water. So the Jews looked at that as God has sent us water, which is very interesting because Jesus said that he was what? The water of life. So here God has sent water And here Jesus using the same. So anyway, I just thought of that. All right, let's go back to the stories. He said, hey, are you the guy? He says, I'm the one. I was blind. He said, well, man, what's going on? You can see. He says, well, there was a man called Jesus. He made some mud and he put it on my eyes. He told me to go down to the pool. I did. Now I can see. Where's the spit in this? How come he didn't say spit? Think.
Couldn't see.
He didn't know he spit in the ground. That's exactly right. All he knew, he had mud on his eyes. So when he's telling the story, he says, the guy put some mud on my eyes and now I can see. Well, where is this man? Well, I don't know. Now comes the good old buddies, the religious leaders of the church, the head elders, the head deacons, and a few ushers. They all come now and they're going to look this over, see what's going on. Somebody read about our good old friends, the Pharisees, verse 13.
Then the people took to the Pharisees the man who had been blind.
Keep going.
The day Jesus had made mud and healed his eyes was a Sabbath day. So now the Pharisees asked the man, how did you get your sight? He answered, he put mud on my eyes, I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees were saying, this man does not keep the Sabbath day, so he is not from God.
Okay. What a bunch of boobs these guys are. Here they come, they bring them to the Pharisees.
Why?
Why are they?
Why did they bring the man to the Pharisees? There must be a reason for them to bring him to there.
Why do you think?
I don't know.
I think to show the Pharisees. I mean, these guys are always bowing down to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees are always putting them down to the ground. And, hey, look at this guy. He's one of us. He put mud in his eye and he healed him. What do y'all think of him?
Yeah.
He can't do this. This guy's been blind all his life, and you haven't done nothing for him.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense because they're saying, here's an alternative for what in the heck you guys are doing to us. They wanted to share it. They wanted to see the Pharisees. And the Pharisees look at this blind man. Obviously, they knew who he was. They're very happy. And what's, again, the very first thought in their mind?
Sabbath breaker.
Are we ever guilty of that? Have we ever heard? We almost had them converted, but we just couldn't get them over on the Sabbath. First thing they thought was, well, he breaks the Sabbath. Some of the Pharisees said, this man, he can't be from God. He doesn't even worship on the right day. He can't be from God. He doesn't even keep the Sabbath the right way we should. But then others asked, by the way, others is not Pharisees. Other people asked, how can a sinner do such miraculous signs? So they were divided. Here you have some that says, well, this can't be from God because you don't keep the Sabbath correctly. And you have others saying, well, how can this guy be a sinner? He does such miraculous things. And so now we have contention. By the way, the word in the Greek means a schism. Schism, is there such a word? Pardon? That's the word I was looking for. That's a one less syllable, but anyway. It's a good thing I don't make my living talking. Schism? There was big time difference between these. They're just not discussing. They're arguing. Because that's one of the parallels the Greek gives us. So, the Pharisees, they finally said, well, I tell you what, let's go to the blind man and ask him. So they go to the blind man and they said, now what do you have to say about him? It was you who eyes were open. Somebody read the answer.
He is a prophet.
He's a prophet. Now, is this blind man a theological genius? Most likely not. How would you interpret that when he said he was a prophet? How would you interpret that? Why did you think he used that word? And there is a specific reason.
Well, he'd be sent from God. And I'm sure he felt that only God could have healed him.
Okay.
And he probably listened. He would know what their Bible said. You know, he had his ears.
Mm-hmm.
And he was probably, you know, he was illiterate because he couldn't see. But he wasn't probably illiterate about the Bible.
Mm-hmm. No, he had some. Now, he's listening to the argument. We have an argument. One over here saying, well, the man's a sinner. He broke the Sabbath. Other group is saying, man, what are you talking about? This is miraculous. Has to be from God. Now, to the Jewish mind, what this man is offering is kind of a kind of a compromise. In the Jewish mind, if you were a prophet, then you had some leeway to do some things different. So if the issue, which to the Pharisee was the issue, you spat on the ground, you used medicine, and you worked, then by saying, well, he must be a prophet, what he's saying is, well, obviously he healed me. We're going to see this in a second. He says, obviously he healed me, so I think it's a good thing. So maybe he must be a prophet because he has some leeway that he could take the mud and put it on me. Now, this is very critical. At this point, does the man know who Jesus Christ really is?
No.
He doesn't have a clue. He knows one thing, and we're going to come to that one thing in a minute. Now, here's the Pharisees arguing. Well, he couldn't be healing because he's a sinner. So what was their logical conclusion? Somebody read verse 18.
The Jews then did not believe it of him that he had been blind and had received sight.
So, I mean, can you see how ridiculous this looked? What's the old adage about the lawyer about my dog bit you and how could he bite you? I don't have a dog. Or I mean, I don't know. What is that, Sue? Do you know?
Yeah, I've said it a thousand times. But I can't.
That's your job. You dwell on that for the next 5 minutes, and then when you figure it out, raise your hand and share that statement with us.
I'll ponder that.
You ponder that something anyway. Big trial deal is something about my dog bit you, that'd be great, except I don't have a dog or something. Well, this is exactly what they're saying. Their logical conclusion is, well, he wasn't blind. It's a fake. So what do they do? Well, let's read on. Now, remember, John is writing this 50 years later, and look how detailed he's getting on this story. I mean, he's not leaving out a thing. So this is very, very important. Okay, let's see.
Until they called the parents of the very one who had received his sight and questioned them, saying, is this your son, who you say was born blind? Then how does he now see?
Okay, so they go get the parents. Now remember, most everybody must have known who this guy was. Most everybody had to know he was blind from birth. But yet these Pharisees, boy, they're not going to give up. So the parents come and they try to intimidate them. Now we'll see how they intimidate them in a minute. Okay, now the parents, they're stand-up, really stand-up parents. So read verse 20.
His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But how he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. Ask him. He is of age and he will speak for himself.
So they come in and say, yep, we know he was blind and he is our son. But now how he can see, well, he's old enough. Ask him. Now, how old did you have to be in Jewish to be of age?
13.
So we don't know if the guy was 13 or if he was 53. Yes, ma'am.
Do you think maybe the people are getting scared because of this miracle, the man can see the blind man?
Well, the parents certainly are scared, and we're going to find out in just a second why they are scared.
Well, not the parents, but I mean the other people that are questioning it.
The Pharisees? Yeah, because what are they worried about? Their position, their power. You see, remember, back in verse 1 or 2, remember when they said, is this guy, he's sick, so who sinned? And the Pharisees come back and said, we're powerful, we're rich, we're healthy, we're blessed of God. What in the world do you think their idea of a Messiah that came along that was humble, didn't even have a place to lay his head, didn't have a house, had absolutely no riches, and this is the Messiah? So boy, they wanted nothing to do with this man. So they call the parents, and the parents say, yep, he's our son, we love him. He was born blind, we love him. But man, we don't know how he got this way. Why did they do that? Well, read on. Somebody read on.
They said this in fear of the Jewish leaders who had announced that anyone saying Jesus was the Messiah would be excommunicated.
Okay. Be tossed out of the synagogue. Now, there was two forms of getting tossed from the synagogue. The lesser, which this one would fit, was that you would be out for 30 days. And during that 30-day period, you couldn't take part of the services. You couldn't go inside the temple and worship. If you happen to have a baby during that 30 days, what happened on the eighth day? Circumcision. Couldn't be circumcised. So you were punished. This wasn't a total cast out, but you were punished. So here's the parents. Their little boy, big boy, however old he was, they were thrilled he could see, but boy, they wasn't standing up because they didn't want to get excommunicated or kicked out for that 30-day period. So they said, he's our son, he can see, he's old enough, let him take the heat. So they kind of weasel out. He is of age, ask him. Now somebody read 24.
A second time they summoned the man who had been blind. Give glory to God, they said. We know this man is a sinner.
Okay, let's stop there. Why did they say give glory to God?
Well, so Jesus wouldn't get glory, I guess.
Okay. Was there any Old Testament reasoning for this? The answer is yes. In Joshua, in Ezekiel, in Isaiah, there were several passages all the way through that said, when things happen, give glory to God. Give glory to God. So what the Pharisees are doing is pulling out, especially from Joshua, which was the major one, I think it's 7:19. They're pulling out from the Old Testament. After all, when something good happens, you're supposed to give glory to God. And say, you can't do this, give him glory, because he's a sinner. They're trying to intimidate him now. Okay, can read on.
He replied, whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing.
Stop right there. Now, this is why I think John is working long time, detailed, with this story. Whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know. And what is that, Leroy?
I was blind, but now I see.
There is the most positive witnessing, the most positive thing that happens in a person's life when they accept Jesus Christ. Can you remember in the old days, which takes out quite a few of you that you won't be able to remember, when people were be baptized, do you remember how they would stand up and they would read a list of 14 or 15 things to them? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
See?
Well, you had to agree to that list.
Yes. So I remember sitting there and saying, if I ever get to be a pastor, I'll never do that. And I did not do that. See? Here is the witness. Here is what God is looking for. He's just been arguing and or discussing and listening to people, the blind man had, to have said he doesn't know how to keep the Sabbath. He's a sinner. And other people were saying, well, he's done something miraculous, must be something to him. And the blind man says the most positive testimony that any human being can say. There's only one thing. Whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. I don't care. The only thing I know, I was blind and now I can see. And that is the only witness that anybody, all of us will have, is the only thing I know, I was blind, I met Jesus Christ, and now I can see. And that's why this story's in here. He knew the only fundamental thing that he needed to know was something has happened in my life. I'm struggling tomorrow with Sabbath school lesson. I have the pleasure of teaching, I think. I don't know if it's a pleasure. It's on archaeology. I could care less about archaeology. I know the result, Rosetta Stone, I know all that. Boring, boring. And I like history. Boring, boring, boring. So I don't know what I'm going to end up with tomorrow, but I know you one thing. Reading Rosetta Stone and finding the Dead Sea Scrolls, which I think are marvelous, isn't going to change one person, in my opinion's values on whether God is speaking in their life or not. And I think I will probably try to prove that tomorrow morning. What I do know that will change lives is I was blind, I met someone, and I can see. And that's a powerful testimony. Wasn't too powerful for the Pharisees, though, was it? That's what's amazing. One thing do I know. I was blind and I can see. Okay, verse 26.
They asked, "What did you do? What did he do to you? How did he make you see again?"
Now, what do you think they're looking for here?
Working,
they're grasping now for straw. Well, what did he do to you? Were you really blind? You know, in boxing, you guys get their eyes shut during the match. They just slit them open. Take a razor blade and slit that eye open and get back out there and get fighting, see? So they're just looking tell right now there's not too many boxing fans here. they're searching for straws. Because they say, well, what did he do to you? What was miraculous? Now his answer gets better. Somebody read 27.
I told you already.
Yeah, that's exactly the tone I'm looking for. Go ahead. Very good.
I told you already. You did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? You do not want to become his disciples too, do you?
Mm-hmm. Now does your say you do not want...
You do not want. You do not want to become his disciples.
Yeah, what version is that?
American Standard.
Okay, yeah, that's closest to the Greek. Yeah, I was surprised, but the American Standard, that's the one I usually use. Yeah, most mine says, do you want?
Yeah.
See, but the Greek is exactly that. You don't want to become one of his disciples, do you? Big difference. Big difference in the translations. One, you would say, that he's buying what the Pharisees are saying and say, well, do you want to follow him? No, he's caught on. He sees the picture. So he says, aren't you listening? I just got through telling you. I was blind. I met this guy named Jesus and I can see. By the way, you want to become one of his disciples? See, he's throwing it right back at him.
Pretty brave.
Now, where do you think this came from? Because Ellen White's very specific. God. Do you see what happens in your life? Not when you look at a bunch of lists of do's and don'ts. Not when you go through 18 things and I want to be baptized. Not that there's anything wrong with the 18 things. It's wrong to read them out in public, my opinion. It's not what's that. What made him able for God to work through his life? He only knew one thing. He said, I only know one thing. I was blind and I can see. And now Ellen White says God is working through him to talk and appeal to these Pharisees. And that's the only one thing he knew. Pharisees, nice bunch of religious people. Verse 28.
Then they hurled insults at him and said, you are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from.
Now, do you see what happens when, as a religious person, you set yourself up as a final authority on what is right and wrong? That's why we must be very careful when we're talking to people of other denominations other than ours, that we do not come away with, we know what you should know, and we know that you don't know it, and if you don't accept it, shame on you. Can I pick on you for a second?
Yeah.
I've seen, I hope I'm not embarrassing you. But that's okay. At one time, you struggled because you felt compelled, if I'm putting right where, to share the Sabbath news with your neighbors. And then you sat here tonight talking about taking gifts to some people last Sunday. Do you see a difference? Say, does it make a change in your philosophy? Or are you still struggling with that?
Well, the situation is kind of different because they saw me keeping the Sabbath.
Yes.
Whereas this is a one-time exposure.
Right.
And but in other times when I was the one-time exposure talking to people, they didn't seem as receptive as this loaf of bread did.
Yes.
I mean, it
yes.
seemed like it. Yeah. It opened up. They were more free to talk.
Yes.
And I felt like I was freer to talk.
Yes.
I kinda
yeah.
learned that I'm not to convert them. The Holy Spirit's going to do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. And I appreciate that. And that's the principle to work off of. It's not our job to convince somebody on what day of the week to go to church. Now, I used to think it was. I used to think that was what we were sent here for.
Ellen White says, though, that a loaf of warm, fresh bread to your neighbor is the best thing you can give them.
Because you have to break those barriers down.
It seemed like it really did. Right?
So you have to break those barriers down. Now,
Angela,
if we're not careful, yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. Thank you, Sam.
I think that's so true because on a Sunday we went to the Six Flags outing. And there was a man there that someone had called through the Open Door Ministry. He did not go Saturday, but he had like five kids. And he wanted season passes. And so he came to the Six Flags thing. And some kind of way, he was looking for someone to be able to buy some of the tickets for his kids to give them a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he ended up with Everett and I. And he was just asking so many questions about Adventism. And he didn't leave Everett's side. He just stayed right there for about an hour or two, just talking.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really impressed with what we were doing with the Six Flags today.
Yes.
So now he's open to coming to church.
Yes, see.
What was his name?
I don't remember his name.
Did he have a short haircut?
He was an old gentleman.
This is a younger person. Yeah. But he had about 5 or 6 kids with him, too.
Yeah. See, what happens is when we get into confrontations and we feel we're correct, we shut doors. We shut doors by sign, body language. We shut doors with whatever, you know, because we're shutting that person. And this is exactly the attitude that the Pharisees had when they're getting down. Remember, they're getting down to the bottom line. God says, well, do you want to be one of the disciples? And they said, they started hearing insults at him. He says, well, you're this fellow's disciple, you poor sinner, you. We, disciples of Moses. And that's where we have to be careful in our witnessing. We have truth. And you don't. Boy, that doesn't get you very far. Period. You, Leroy?
And all this new visitation that's going on, because I can't do it because I couldn't hear anybody. It would be interesting. But what is the purpose of all the visiting of these people?
They're all unchurched. They have no home church. So we're trying to reach out and make friends, continue to call, send cards, let them know we're praying, keep them informed of things are going on. For instance, I don't know how this worked out, but there was a nice brochure about prayer meeting in there. So that when people think of Adventists, or they're looking for a church or a home to come to, then we're there breaking those barriers down. And all of this is within 5 miles of the church.
Well, the reason I come up with that, because I always have barriers. But the reason for visiting the people is to let them know that there's a church that they can come to.
Mm-hmm.
How about the reason for visiting the people was to be to introduce them to God?
Yes.
Regardless of whether they ever
yes.
go to a church.
Yes. Yeah. That's absolutely correct, and I appreciate you bringing that out. Is certainly I can tell you right now the downfall of this program in Adventist terminology. It's not measurable. And we tend not like things that are not measurable.
That's right.
See, we don't know what influence we're having. We have 900 people that we're praying for. And we have no influence of maybe 3 years from now, that person turns to God and becomes a Baptist.
Wonderful.
See, at one time we would have said, well, we lost them. But I think we're waking up to the fact that this man knew only one thing. I was blind and I can see. That's all he knew. But boy, it surely was all that God needed. So, no, very good. All right, let's keep going.
You want to read what, 30, server 30?
He's coming back. Now here's where God is really speaking through this man.
The Pharisees have just said, as for this fellow, we don't know anything about him. They're talking about Jesus. And the man says, well, that's very strange, the man replied. He can heal blind men, and yet you don't know anything about him? Well, God doesn't listen to evil men, but he has open ears to those who worship him and do his will. Since the world began, there has never been anyone who could open the eyes of someone born blind. So if this man were not from God, he couldn't do it.
Yeah. There's where God is witnessing through this man to the Pharisees by using their own logic. Well, if he's a sinner, then God can't use him. And there's never been anybody in recorded that was blind and now they can see. And here's God using him for a testimony. And the good Pharisees, I'll read verse 34. To this they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? and they threw him out. Do you see that arrogance? Please, let's not, any of us, ever be arrogant with other people. How dare you? You were steeped in sin from birth and you're lecturing us. And they threw him out.
Well, from their point of view, it sounded like a good argument.
Yep.
The ancient man, if he was an illegitimate child, is that it?
No, he's so just because he's blind. Yeah, because he's blind. Do you see all of this did not move the Pharisees one inch? Even to the point of, well, that's key. Maybe his parents have made a mistake. I mean, how can you mistake being blind? Well, what did he do to you? Parents, are you sure he's blind? And then when they get down to the bottom line, they just said, well, you're a sinner, and they throw him out.
Yeah, my mind says illegitimate, calls him illegitimate. I just learned, so it's not an accurate thing.
I think Mr. Taylor's missed the point, in my opinion, yeah. I don't think the illegitimacy never came. The blindness was the reason that he was, so that's where, when he says you were steeped in sin. Now, I can see what one could say, you were steeped in sin and the fact that you were illegitimate, but I don't believe, think the steeped in sin, you were blind. You went right back to where they started. Okay. I want to get to the next parts. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Son of Man is a term in the book of Isaiah for being the Messiah. Do you believe in the Son of Man?
Now, he must recognize the voice.
Would think so.
Jesus talking to him.
Verse 36, what does your version say? Mine says, who is he, sir? What does your versions have?
Who is he, Lord?
Okay, that's the right one. Okay, that's where I want to go. Verse 36 and in verse 38, the man calls Jesus Lord in both verses. Is that 38 have Lord?
Yes.
All right. What do you all have in 36 and 38? Mine has Sir in 36 and Lord in 38. Okay.
36 is Sir. Is Sir.
Yeah.
And when he hears Jesus' voice,
yeah,
he turns it to Lord.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The first one is in the Greek it is Lord, Lord. But there's two Lords, so the translations are correct. The first one that he says when Jesus asks him, do you believe in the Son of Man? He says, who is he, Sir? Who is he, Mister? Who is he, Lord? In the aspect that he's recognizing and being very courteous. So, sir is probably a correct translation in this particular, even though the Greek does use the word Lord Kyrios. Okay. So he's saying, kind man, Mr. nice gentleman, who is he? Does he have a clue? Nope. The man asks, tell me so that I might believe in him. There's the teachability. That's what God's looking for. Teachability. Jesus said, somebody read 37.
You have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking to you, or with you.
And then read 38. This is the highlight of the story.
Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him.
Yeah. This word, Lord, is the one for Messiah. Creator, Jesus. Do you see how simple accepting and coming to Christ is? And we make it so hard. What hoops did this man jump through? Didn't even get the 20th century Bible course.
Revelation
missed it. Because he came to the logical conclusion that the Pharisees and the crowds and the people all could have come to. This man was blind. He met Jesus Christ, and now he can see. And so Jesus says, "Do you accept the Son of Man?" He says, "Kind sir, who is he?" Jesus says, "He's standing in front of you. In fact, it is me." And that man's brain calculated very quickly. I was blind. I can see. And he said, "Master, Lord, Messiah," fell down. The Greek's very explicit, and worshipped. Worshipped as we would think that worship was. He recognized this was the Savior of the universe. Very beautiful story. I think I want to stop there. We'll pick up with verse...
I was curious. It says, "For judgment I have come into this world."
Yeah, well, that's why I'm stopping. We're going to pick up that because that needs to be explained. And I was going to try to end it with... Let's hold that.
Did yours say judgment?
Yeah. What's your say?
I'm spiritually blind.
Okay. Yeah. You see, we think of judgment as harsh. You know, boy, judgment day is coming. We think judgment, and judgment is when you come in and you're going to give out punishment. This particular verse is not talking about that whatsoever.